This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Sammy, when it comes to parenting, I have some challenging children, I feel like sometimes.
You raise these often.
I've talked about my son being 18 months old and cutting up mangoes with a butcher's knife on the kitchen table and telling me it's fine.
Very dangerous.
Yes. Well, I found an expert. She's from AHA Parenting. Her name is Dr. Laura Markham, and she joins us right now. Hi, Dr. Laura.
Hi. I love that story about your son and the mangoes.
Yeah, well, it turns out he had cut up seven other mangoes, and they were on the table ready for breakfast. many of us feel like we might have strong-willed children. What are some of the hallmarks that we may actually be dealing with a strong-willed child?
Well, strong-willed kids can't be intimidated. You know, I think we're all born somewhere on a continuum between more compliant and more strong-willed. And well, people who are more compliant, they will, you know, just to keep the peace, they'll go ahead and do what you want. It's like, okay, if you feel this strongly about this, all right, we'll do it that way. Your way, it's fine. Whereas a strong-willed kid will say, no, my way is going to be the right way. My way is the best way. And then if you say, oh, I'm the boss, I'm going to make this decision, because after you are, after all, the parent, the strong-willed child will say, are you trying to intimidate me? You know, it's a matter of their integrity on the line. There's no amount of force or threat that is going to be enough to get the strong-willed child to abandon what they want to do. So what you can do is you can connect with them. Strong-willed kids will give up what they want and do what you want, but for only one reason. It's you. It's you, the parent. They love you. You're in their corner. They know that you try as best you can to meet their needs and even to do what's going to make them happy. And when you do need to say no to that second cookie or, you know, staying up later or whatever it is you're saying no to, a sharp knife and the mangoes, they know that even though they don't want to go along with you, you're usually on their side, so they'll do it for you.
I think, you know, one of the challenges I find is I find myself, you know, regularly disciplining my children at home, and my wife chimes in, you know, but they're just kids and, you know, that's how they act. But they act very differently at school or at kindergarten to how they act at home. And not only that, I've got two different disciplining styles. Like if I even hinted at a smack bottom to my daughter, she would burst into tears and do whatever I say. Whereas to like my son, he'd be like, you might as well just smack my bottom and get it on with it because I've got to get back to whatever I was doing. It kind of leaves
me... That's a strong-willed child.
Yeah, yes. But it kind of leaves me flabbergasted with, you know, kind of how to negotiate the disciplining situation.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because obviously with your daughter, she's not a strong-willed child in the same way. She might have other things that she's stubborn about, but she's not. She's willing to go along with you if you just look at her crossly, right? So you never need to use force with a child like that. You can use reason with her. But your son, it will backfire if you use force with him.
Mm.
In fact, he'll just fight you back. And as soon as he's as big as you are, forget it, you know? So with your son, you don't have a chance unless you start right now using a different kind of parenting. And as I said, you know, the discipline that's going to work, discipline means guidance, right? That's what it actually means. Discipline comes from the same root as disciple, which means to guide or to teach. So if we're guiding our children, what's the most effective way to guide them? It's not to do a smack on the bottom. The most effective way to guide them is for them to feel like we understand. And sometimes we need to set limits, but we always understand. I know it's really hard to stop playing and get ready for bed. I bet when you grow up, you'll play all night every night, won't you? And it's time for bed now. Let's go. So you're understanding. You're not raising your voice.
Mm.
And at the same time, you're sticking to your limits. You know, there's no way around that. And they learn they don't always get what they want. But they get something better. They get a dad who understands when they get upset about something and, you know, who helps them no matter what.
Dr. Laura, I'm a fairly new parent. I've got an 18-month-old. And I just would love to hear from you. There's some simple basics or simple steps on how to be a better parent. Got some advice?
Mm. Well, 18-month-olds are wonderful, but they're notoriously moving into what some people call the terrible twos. I call it the terrific twos. I love two-year-olds because the world is so exciting to them, and they're finding out everything, and they're exploring and learning, and they're just always excited. But it is true that they don't have a very well-developed prefrontal cortex. That's the part of the brain that makes decisions, that understands that when you take a certain action, it's going to lead to a certain result.
Yeah.
You know, the part of the brain that's able to say, it's not actually an emergency. I know my alarm bells are going off because daddy said no, but it's not really an emergency. I can really live with the situation, and I don't have to throw myself on the floor and scream about it, you know. But they don't have a very well-developed prefrontal cortex yet. So, you know, 18-month-olds are going to be, they're going to be defiant, they're going to be difficult, they're going to scream, and they're going to be illogical. So I think that one thing that you would find that's really helpful, and it's helpful at all ages, but it's helpful starting now, is what we call emotion coaching. You know, researchers looked at kids when they got emotional, and they looked at how parents responded. And what we found is that a lot of parents will say, oh, you don't need to feel that way, or you're overreacting, or be a big boy, that didn't hurt, or your sister doesn't, you know, didn't react like that, or stop right now when I tell you, stop crying. And they just argued with the child's emotions, or they criticized them, or they shamed the child for having the emotions. They put them in their crib until they could calm down, whatever. But the parents who, instead of doing those things, the parents who accepted the emotion, even while they stopped the child from behaving badly, meaning the child couldn't throw his toys at your face and the child, you know, was, they would take the toy away, right? The child wasn't allowed to, you know, dump his food on the floor and get more food, you know, that all the things that you might see an 18-month-old do. They were careful to check the behavior, to stop the behavior, but they allowed the feelings. You are so mad. You're really mad, aren't you? You don't want this diaper, right? And simply acknowledging the emotions, even though an 18-month-old doesn't say much, their receptive language is much more advanced than their expressive language. So they understand a lot. And simply knowing that mom and dad understand what they're going through, and even giving them the words for it so they can say, I'm mad, instead of throwing their cup in your face, you know, it turns out that that helps kids grow that prefrontal cortex faster. It helps them become more emotionally intelligent, which just means they're growing a brain that is able to calm down faster and a brain that is able to regulate when they get upset.
Brilliant. Sorry, I was just having a moment where I was like, okay, this is deeply helpful for my situation at home, because you feel like that you're constantly becoming the enforcer. And you know that, you know, you have those feelings where you're like, I'm frustrated. I don't want to do that. I don't want to clean my room. I don't want to go out now. And you're like, I want to hear that and I want to honor that, but we're already 15 minutes late. And we need to get moving. And just taking that moment to pause and reflect on that seems really significant. And I'm assuming that then also applies for teenagers as well. If you're kind of having a heavy dispute, to actually hear and honor their point of view before moving forward?
Absolutely. You know, the thing about anger is it doesn't begin to lessen until it feels heard. Yeah. So when your teenager is furious at you about something, you may not agree with them. You may not think they're right, but you can listen and you can say, wow, I hear how important this is to you. I didn't realize this was that important to you. You really wish you could have a later curfew or whatever it is. And I hear that the other kids do. You know, I'm not going to change my mind right now about the curfew, but I'm glad to hear from you how important it is to you. And I'm willing to talk about it more, and I'm willing to think through with you how you could help me feel, as the adult, as the parent, how you could make me feel confident that you would be safe if you had a later curfew. You know, I worry about your safety. And so I know you have good judgment, but, you know, I don't always feel good about you being out so late and, you know, more people have been drinking if they're on the road late or whatever. And I worry about something happening to you. So I'm willing to keep talking about it with you. So you're explaining your point of view. You're not just trying to be an ogre, and you're listening to their point of view, even when you're not changing your mind at this minute. And you're also giving them a chance to counter what your concern is. So, you know, if you're if your 12-year-old says, I want to go to such and such a party, and you say, will there be a grown-up there? Okay, I'm going to call the grown-up. No, no, you can't do that. You can't call the parent of the other kid because I would be embarrassed. You can say, you know, I need to be reassured that there will be an adult at that party, and we don't have to do it that way with me calling, but there needs to be a way where I'm confident about that, and I'm confident you're going to be safe. And once kids get that you're going to express your whatever your reservation is, and, you know, there may be a way for them to convince you that it's really okay and that you would change your mind, that makes an enormous difference, too, because they begin, instead of just lying to you, which is really not a good thing for anybody involved, they begin to actually come to you and say, okay, I know you won't like this, but maybe we could do this about it and you would feel more confident about the situation. And they actually find, like my kids used to come to me. I have a 22-year-old and a 26-year-old now. And they would come to me in the teen years and say, Mom, you won't like it that I want to do this with my friends, but here's how I'm going to handle it. I'm going to get my homework done this day on this in this way, and when we go, I'm going to call you from the place so you know I'm safe and blah, blah. And they had, like, the whole thing. They knew how to meet my concerns, and it was almost as if they were thinking logically about how to keep themselves safe, organized, and on top of their responsibilities. Just because I had said these things over the years, they began to automatically do that and then let me know how they were doing it.
Brilliant. Dr. Laura, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I enjoyed talking with you.
And if you do want to find out more about Dr. Laura and all those kind of things, head along to ahaparenting.com. Lots of great advice there as well.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.